Industry Outlaws on dirtfans.com. I'm Cat Scratch LaFever in the Cat House. I want to thank last week's guest, Unknown Henson. Unknown Henson, for the opening music. You can catch Unknown at Jim Porter's in Louisville, Kentucky on December 14th. You can also catch him the next day in Lamont, Illinois at Stage 83 on December 15th. And like I mentioned before, you can come party with the Industry Outlaws at the Southgate House in Newport, Kentucky on New Year's Eve. Look forward to seeing you all there. If you get a chance, check out these other show dates. I'm sure you won't be disappointed. This week's guest is a legend out of Union, South Carolina, and Jerry Walker and myself had the pleasure of sitting down and talking with him. He's got many stories, and we could probably have him on two or three times, and I hope to have him back. Sit back and enjoy Billy Scott. From Union, South Carolina, Billy Scott, welcome to the Industry Outlaws.
Good to be here.
Billy, before you started driving a car, I assume you went to a racetrack first?
Yeah, we had a couple of little tracks around here in Union and up Spartanburg. I guess the first race I went to was at Spartanburg Fairgrounds, and Cotton Owens and all them were running the old model modified. And then later on, you know, I started going to the tracks around here in Union. And really how I got started in racing is right here at the Beltline Speedway in Union. And I was working with a boy. I worked for Milliken Textile Plant. And I was working with him 10 hours a day putting in machinery. And he was building a race car, and I helped him build it. And the first night we got the car ready, he had to go out of town. And his cousin told me, said, if you tear the car up, you help me build it back, I'll let you drive it. And it really was Cotton Owens' nephew, Bobby Owens. And I think it was a 37 Dodge, six-cylinder Dodge. And I drove, that's the first race I drove in. And I finished third in the first heat race I drove and run hot in the main event. But I told several people the reason I run third, I was all over the track and people were afraid to pass me. But that's the way I got started. And then I bought a new house here in town. And across the road from where I bought the house was a little shop. And I kept going over there helping them work on cars. And finally, you know, they let me drive one of them. And that's how I got started.
And before you got started, the first race that you went to, you talked about, who took you?
My daddy. My daddy and one or two of my brothers went to Spartanburg. And I knew we'd get going in that track. And we had to go through the fairground. It was every year at the fair was where they'd have a big race. And we went through the fairground gate and had to go across the track into the racetrack, into the infield. And somebody wrecked us. We got right there next to that big gate going to the infield. And they was throwing mud all over us and making all kind of racket. And it really scared me. You know, and then that was the memory I got of the first race.
How old were you?
Well, I was probably 15, 16 years old then. But when I was really about 20 years old before I first got in a race car.
Yeah, Billy, I see you won the track championship at Starlight Speedway. What was that track like?
Well, it was a quarter of a mile, short track, narrow track, and really the year I won it, it was a NASCAR track. Now, first went to Starlight, I was driving a flathead, the 32-34 Ford coupe. Sam Smith here in Union owned the car, and I helped him, you know, run some, and he let me drive it in a flathead first time I went to Monroe. And I run Monroe with his car, Sam's car, 13 times at Monroe, and I won 11 of the races. And he sold the car. But then later on, NASCAR run the track, and they didn't run it for about a half a year. Me and Tiny Lund and Leroy Yarbrough and Little Bud Moore and all them was up in there running. And we had the big cars, the big motors, running Starlight. And I don't believe they run about 11 or 12, maybe 13 races. And I won the point system at that track. And I believe that was in 67 or 68 is when I done that. But in that same year, I won the track championship at Charleston Speedway. In the same year, I won at the Savannah Speedway. I won three track championships in 1 year driving for Marion Cox out of Hemingway, South Carolina.
Billy, would you share any of those stories with us about Leroy Yarbrough?
Do what now?
Do you have any good stories about Leroy Yarbrough, those guys back in those days?
Well, he was a good friend of mine. I've been to his big place down at Lake Mary before he got sick and got out of racing. But I guess about the only thing, Leroy, he let me drive his car one night. He called me up and says, I want you to drive my car at Myrtle Beach. And I believe it was on a Thursday night, and I had to work 10 hours a day at Milliken. Had to be at work at 7 the next morning. But he had a 57 Chevrolet, and I run Leroy's car and ran it. I believe I run 3rd or 4th or 5th. I made gas money going down there, but it was a better car for me to drive, you know, and for him to, ask me to drive it was an honor. And I went down, I'd have drove it for nothing, you know, just to get in a better car, and I made a good showing. But I remember that of Leroy. And I remember at Augusta, we run Augusta on Saturday nights, a lot of nights, and in Greenville Pickens a lot of nights. But Leroy and Tiny and Tom Pistone, they always was going on having a good time at the racetrack. But Leroy was a heck of a good driver. I just hated that he got sick and, you know, didn't. Well, he made it big, but he didn't, you know, wasn't no superstar, but he was well on his way.
What can you tell us about Tiny Lund?
I guess Tiny Lund was probably one of the best dirt track drivers, him and Curtis Turner. They both, I've run some with Curtis down at Lakewood, down in Atlanta on that mile dirt. But Tiny and I run teammates with Tiny 1 year. We were, you know, good friends and raced every week together somewhere at different tracks. And he was a heck of a dirt track driver. And he really, you know, he really knows how to drive a race car.
You mentioned Marion Cox there. I mean, he was a pretty historic car owner, I guess. Sounds like, I mean, he had drivers like Dink Weidenhaus.
Yeah, well, I started the year after Dink quit. Dink went into business somehow or another and had to quit racing to get enough money, to borrow enough money to go into business. And Dink quit, and I started driving for Marion. And he stayed in the NASCAR a long time, you know, and had a lot of good. Darrell Derringer drove for him at Daytona, and I helped Marion the year that Darrell drove for him. And the next year, I started driving the Marion's car. We called him Preacher Cox. Yeah, I won 9 races that year that I drove for him and won them 3 track championships in the same year that I drove for Marion Cox. And that was in the sportsman class, you know, and that's what the Busch is now. Back then it was Grand National and Sportsman. And now it's the Cup and the Busch, you know. But I'd won 9 races and 3 track championships in 1 year with Marion.
Was that car number 50?
Number 50, red and white, number 50. Yeah, we run Columbia and Greenville Pickens, Savannah, and that was the 3 main tracks, and we run the Monroe that year with it.
Myrtle Beach?
In Myrtle Beach. Well, now, I drove somebody else at Myrtle Beach. I drove for Bill Baggs at Myrtle Beach. That's where I had a bad wreck and broke my leg at Myrtle Beach. And that wasn't in Marion's car, I don't believe. But he's, you know, he's from right up above the Hemingway. Ain't too far from Myrtle Beach Speedway.
Billy, did you race a lot with Stick Elliott?
Yeah. We used to try to kill each other every Saturday night. But we, old Stick was a good one. We didn't get into it too much. But back then, you know, things were pretty rough. You could, you know, you could knock a man out and get rid of him and not carry your car up. But now, you know, nowadays and later on, you couldn't do that with the cars, you know, as tight cars we were running. But he was a good competitor, but he was rough. But, you know, and drivers get into it for one thing or another on the racetracks. And he was, you know, it was easy to get into him with him because he went out there to win. And sometimes he'd rough you up to win. But, and me and Ralph Earnhardt used to have some run-ins too because, you know, Ralph was right there with and Leroy and Tiny and all of us. And Ralph, we run Greenville Pickens and Columbia every week too when I belonged to NASCAR. But Ralph, he was a good one. But me and him would get into it every once in a while.
Yeah, well, it really only seems befitting that you won the first annual Stick Elliott Memorial back in 85.
Yeah, I won that. And I think this coming weekend that they're going to have a Stick Elliott Memorial race this weekend. This coming
Indeed
weekend. I believe it is. I'm going to try to get over if I can. It ain't about 30 miles from here.
I'm sure a lot of fans there at Cherokee would love to have you there, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, Rock Galt used to own it, and he sold out. I can't remember the man's name that bought it 3 or 4 years ago. And he's running it now, but I hadn't been there too much since I retired. I think Rock sold it about the same time I retired from racing.
Yeah, I believe that was in 98. I believe the...
Yeah, about the same. I believe that's what year I retired, is 98. But I did, you know, I've won a bunch of races, but the last one thing I'm proud of in racing is the last 2 years. I was 64, I think, when I quit. And I won races the last 2 years I raced. You know, and I got, my wife wanted me to quit, and competition and money was the main thing, and know-how. We didn't, it's pretty hard to keep up with everything coming out. And it was hard to win, you know, and I had a bad leg and all, and I had it replaced, and I just retired, you know. But I've won track champion several times at Gaffney. Cherokee.
Yeah, I got to watch you a lot over your career, and even in the last few years of your career, you were always a competitor. You weren't just out there racing. You know, you were a contender.
And I said as long as I could do that, as long as I could be competitive, and my health was good, and, you know, would keep up enough money to run, you know, I was going to race. But it's got to, money got to be the problem, and age and health too, probably. Maybe quit a little early, but
I gotta ask you, what about the Dixie Twister car? That's one beautiful race car to me. Tell us a little bit about the Dixie Twister car.
Well, I tell you, Bobby Burnett owned the car up here at right above Spartanburg, right out of Spartanburg, and he was one of the best. I had a bunch of good chassis men, but he was a good chassis man on that race car. And back then, we run fiberglass springs. And he could set that car up with a tape measure. You know, we had scales and all, but sometimes we didn't have time to weigh the car out for the race. You know, if you run every night, two or three nights, you'd have to be in a hurry to get to the track. And he had 4 points on that chassis that he could measure that car. He had a height limit, you know, on them 4 points, so many inches from the floor, from the ground up. And he could set that car up, and we'd go to the race and win it by just using a tape measure. But I didn't drive but 1 year for him. And We won 20 races, and we beat them everywhere we went in that car. And a friend of mine went with the races. He kept up with everything I done. Every week where I finished and what happened and all that. And at the end of the year, he said, "Billy, you blow 27 motors this year. Now, you won 20 races." Because I knew how many I'd won. I was keeping up with that. But the motors, I wasn't keeping up with how many I blowed. But we never had, with that car, we never had one new part to go in the motor. It was all used stuff. We'd buy used stuff, and that's the reason we blowed so much. All we could afford was used stuff. We couldn't afford the new stuff. But we would run it till it blowed, but we was out in front most of them races that them motors blowed in. If we had had new motors, I could have won 30 or 40 races that year with that car, but it was, one of the best cars that I ever had.
What kind of chassis was that?
Larry Martin. He's a local boy here in Spartanburg. He's got a place over at David Pearson's old shop now. That's where he's working out of. And Larry, he's built, when I drove the Bradley boys, number zero, Larry Martin built that chassis. And probably that white zero from the Bradley boys was in Larry Martin's chassis. We won some big races. We beat the best, one of them big tens at Concord one night. They call it the Big Ten race. And the best in the country was there, and we led the whole 100 laps in that Larry Martin's car, Larry Martin chassis. And the Bradley boys built the car. And Dave Wynn, he built the motor in it. Larry Martin, he could build a good chassis back then.
Did you find that from the time you started with that first race car until the time you end, how much easier did it get to drive the car?
The first car I drove?
Right.
Well, I drove that, the very first car, I just drove it one time, but then later on that season I got, working with these people right behind my house, and we would tear up every week, with this. It was a quarter of a mile rough track, and we just got into racing in Beltline Speedway, and I didn't know how to drive, but the first five races I drove, not the first one in that Dodge, but the next five races I drove, I turned over five times out of the first seven races, and they give me a nickname. They call me Rollover. And the announcer, he give everybody a nickname, we call it. And he give me, mine was Rollover, and they steal people. That was, 48 years ago. And they steal people call me Rollover when they see me, the old racing friends.
Do you remember racing a lot with Bryant Wallace?
Yeah. Now, he'd come in. Most of the time, me and Brian would meet up at Greenville Pickens on a Saturday night deal at Greenville Pickens. And he was a good boy and a good driver, and he had a car that, it was a winning race car. And he won races in it. And I want to say he got struck by lightning or something later on in life. But I didn't run with him as much as I did Tiny and Leroy and Ralph Earnhardt. Me and Ralph Earnhardt probably run together more because we run all the, sometimes we'd run four races a week. And I run pretty regular with Ralph.
Billy, you got any idea how many total wins you would have?
I say hundreds, but I say over 300. My wife says five. So I didn't keep up with them. But I got a little story I can tell you about race car drivers is a little bit superstitious. I had one helmet that I won 100 races in, and I wore out the padding at the top of your helmet, And I wore it out, and I put new padding in it, but I wanted to wear that helmet every week. And, you know, so I could win the race. That's what I thought. But Ralph Earnhardt, he raced in these old $3 tennis shoes, I call them, the cloth-type tennis shoes. And he wore a hole where his big toe was in them shoes. But he'd wear them shoes every week, just like I'd worn that same helmet every week. I don't know how many races Ralph won in them shoes, but I know I did have a helmet, and I still got it somewhere. I believe my daughter's got it up in her attic, but I won over 100 races with one helmet. But I had a bunch of years with 15, 16, 18, 20 wins, a bunch of years. And that's not counting the heat races. That's counting main events. A lot of them, it's got 700, 800, 900, they counted the heat races they won. But I didn't keep up with the main events, much less the heat races. I wished I had them, but I didn't.
Well, you need to tell your daughter not to get that helmet out and dust it off a little bit, because I have a feeling that, and I'd like to see it one day in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Well, we was talking about this museum in Spartanburg they was going to build, and something happened to money. They got started on it and quit, and the Bantam Chef people here in Union sponsored my car last 4 or 5 years, and he bought the car, the last car that I drove at Cherokee, that yellow and blue Zero.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he's going to restore it. And, you know, they was talking putting it in that museum up there. And I got a bunch of trophies. My wife want me to do something with them. So one day I might, you know, if they build a museum, I want to get rid of some stuff. But I've been wanting to find that helmet. And it wasn't no... a full face helmet. I never could wear a full face helmet. I smothered in them. Had my nose broke, I think, 3 times, and I breathed through my mouth a lot. And, you know, a full face helmet, back when they first come out, they'd fog up, and you couldn't get rid of the area underneath the glass. They'd fog up, and you couldn't see. And they smothered me, so I went back to the old helmet, the bubble type, what we call the bubble type helmet. But we started out with one, just a helmet that had leather sides on each side of it years ago. And that's the first helmet I had, and I let a boy borrow it at Columbia one night. And it was the last race of the season, and I never did see that helmet no more. So I don't know, forgot who I let borrow it or what, I never did get it back. But I have won a bunch of races in about 4 or 5, 6 different states. You know, I didn't go everywhere because I always worked at Milliken. And, you know, I had a 10-hour day job and worked at Milliken. And I didn't, you know, I stayed within a couple hundred miles of home where I could get back. We run a lot of Thursday night races, and I had to work on Fridays. And, I stayed, you know, pretty close to home.
Did you ever run Eldor Speedway?
Never. Always wanted to, but never did get to run there. Had never been there. But I always wanted to. But I run the Pennsboro up at, you know, they have them $50,000 races up there. And I got to run up there a couple of times. And they'd have 130, 40 to 150 cars. And, you know, they'd start 24 of them or 26. And I never did make the field up there. But one time, I think they had 113 race cars, 114. And I qualified 13th fastest out of them cars. And I was lined up on the pole in my heat race. And you had to finish fourth in the heat race to make the show. And pulled off the line to start the race, and my transmission tore up, pulling off the line. And that's the closest I ever making it up at Pennsboro. But now I got to run, I don't know where, you probably might ask me this question, but while I had it on my mind where I've been running, I got to run Martinsville when I run NASCAR, and a lot of dirt NASCAR tracks in Augusta, Macon, Georgia, and I run Daytona one year with Tiny. Me and Tiny was teammates at Daytona, and I didn't finish. Something happened, the wheel burn froze up on it. But 1973 and 74, Richard Howard, the promoter at Charlotte Motor Speedway, they put on a race deal trying to promote the racing. The goal was to get 100,000 people. This is 1973. Get 100,000 people at the track. And they had a, what they call a name the driver contest. You could sign a petition, and that would be one vote for me, you know. And people signed up everywhere. You know, I had things out everywhere. And they had it 2 years in a row, and I won it both years. I got 70-something thousand votes the first year, and Dick Trickle was the second vote getter. And Charlie Blanton from around here, he was in on it. My wife said he was second that year. But the second year, I got 50-something thousand votes, and I had a Junior Johnson car 1 year. Well, both years. No, Hutchinson Pagan built a new car, and the track furnished it. Next year, I had a Junior Johnson car that was, Cale Yarber was driving, I think, for Junior then. And I had the number one car. You know, Cale drove a number 11. They just took one off of it. And I got to run the World 600 2 years in a row. But I run it three or four times, but I didn't have no good car. But them 2 years, I had a good car. And I guess that was one of the highlights of my career, that one of the races that I was running 450 miles in the race, and I was riding around behind Cale Yarber and Bobby Allison. No, it wasn't Cale, it was Bobby Allison and Darrell Waltrip. And I was running fifth place, 450 miles in the race, and every time I'd come around down the back straightaway, I'd glance over on the scoreboard and see my car number on that scoreboard in the infield. And me, a rookie, you know, sitting there in fifth place, you know, but I blowed a tire and hit the wall my car was pushing, and I didn't have sense enough to slow down or you know, get them to change it in the pits, because I didn't even have a radio, just had a little old bitty pit board that you couldn't hardly see from the racetrack. But that was one of my highlights of my racing, to get the, you know, start at a little bit of quarter mile here in Union and get to run Daytona and get to run the World 600 and 500 at Charlotte. So, you know, I figured I went all the way to the top, and I could have made the big time racing, but I wanted to keep my job and my family. You know, back then, the race car drivers had a lot of problems with family because the wives didn't go with them. And I wanted to keep my job and keep my family. And I really chose not to go big time because they were so much, you'd have a job this week, and next week they'd fire you. You know, just a lot of backstabbing, and I really fell out and didn't. I didn't want to go up. But when I was running that 600, me and Leonard Wood was talking there at the payoff stand, you know, waiting on the money. And Leonard Wood asked me what I was going to do. And I said, I'm going back home and go to work. I lost $500 this week. And that's what it cost me to go up there and race. And I was winning a race or two every weekend and making some good money and had a good job, and I didn't really want to go up to racing. And while we were standing there, a man come up and asked me, did I want to go to Dover and run? And today I was watching that Dover race, and I thought about that, and I always wished I had went to Dover, but I told him the same thing. I said, man, I lost $500 this week. I'm going back home and go to work. And, you know, win a couple of races on short tracks. But I did turn down, and I could have, I run Charlotte twice in the good cars, and I know I could have done it if I wanted to. And then I put it off and waited too late. You know, the money got to growing and everything, and they got to hunting younger drivers. But at one time, I didn't want to go up. And then later on, I said, man, I should have went up. And, you know, but I don't regret it. I've had, you know, won a lot of races and made a lot of good friends. And, you know, had a lot of good times racing, you know, the way I'd done it. But I always wish, especially every time they run Dover, I said, man, I wish I'd went up there and run that track just to see what. I like to watch them at Dover and Bristol. Have some good racing.
I just came into some 8mm films from dirt tracks around this part of the country, and also I believe I have a race from 1973 at Charlotte. So I can't promise, but I may have you on 8mm film.
Yeah.
From 73 that year. But I want to tell you something. When you say you didn't move up, I understand the way that the world looks at that. But to me, you are at the top. And if you'd have went NASCAR racing, it would have been taking a step down to me.
Yeah.
You guys were my heroes that ran on dirt.
Well, I felt the same way, too. You know, I was really happy and enjoyed what I was doing. And I didn't want to go that route at the time, because when I first started, I wouldn't even have nothing to do with the reporters and all around the racetrack. You know, I didn't want to go up. I was happy where I was at.
And I'm not so sure the skill level isn't higher at the dirt on the dirt tracks.
Yeah, well, people ask me about that, and I love NASCAR and I like asphalt because I've run them both. You know, years ago, we'd run one asphalt one night and dirt the next night. And to me, it's a piece of cake running the big tracks and asphalt tracks comparing to dirt. And it's like running on a dirt road and running on an interstate comparing the two races. And to me, it's a whole lot more work, and I think takes more skill on the short dirt tracks than it did on the big tracks. You know, if you could stand the speed on the big tracks, I mean, there wasn't nothing to it to me. Of course, I know there's a lot to it, but still, it ain't as hard as it is on dirt.
What was your favorite dirt track?
Oh man, I guess overall, I'd say Cherokee at Gaffney and Metrolina Speedway in Charlotte. But now, we had the old Concord Speedway was great, and the new Concord Speedway, before they asphalted it was a great track. Henry Furr owned on that track, and he could really keep a racetrack smooth and hard. But Concord and the Metroliner and Cherokee was, you know, I'd say my three best tracks that I like. Of course, and we had a Sugar Creek Speedway here in Union that they built later on. And that was the year I drove the Dixie Twister. And it was a jam-up track. It was little and tight. And I won races out there in that Dixie Twister here in Union years later, you know. But all of them's good. I loved all of them. But some of them was, you know, what, just like Pennsboro, up there, they'd pay $50,000. And as far as the track concerned, is probably one of the worst tracks they ever tried to run on. But you know, just the way it was made, and it had a creek running down through the middle of it, and you had two bridges you had to cross in each turn, one in each end, and it was probably more dangerous track than any track. But they paid good money, you know, and that's where we went.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Do you remember number 17 City Chevrolet car, Robert G?
Yeah. Yeah, I drove for Robert G one year. That was Dale Earnhardt's father-in-law. He married Brenda, Robert G.'s daughter, the second time Dale did. We were all good friends, Dale and Robert G. and Brenda. And Dale and Brenda used to come home with us on weekends and spend the night with us. Well, that's where Dale met Brenda before they got married. He met her at my house coming home on the weekends with us. They started going together then. But, and we had Raymond Fox built them engines with Robert G. in his first year that Robert G. got in the racing. And, you know, it wasn't hard to, you know, you spend more money than you make back then if you wasn't careful. And I just run 1 year with him. And I went back to the car 50. I won a bunch of races with that car 50. But something come up, and he wanted to try another driver. Henry Furr, he was running the old Concord Speedway then. And Henry Furr promised Robert G. he'd buy him some new tires every week. And me and Robert G. was running recaps. And some of them was running new tires, but we still, I think we won 9 races with Robert G. that year. And Raymond Fox, you know, he died, but he could build a good engine. Raymond Fox Jr. And Robert G. went with Hayward, and I went back to the 50. And I drove for that 50 car off and on 3 or 4 different times, you know. But that was a good car. That was a good deal that we had. But it was the first car Robert owned, and, you know, you got to learn some tricks of the trade when you're a car owner. You got to, you know, you don't know it all the first year. But we had good stuff, and we won a few races with him.
When you said Hayward, are you referring to Hayward Plyler?
Yeah. Yeah, he drove for Robert the year after I did. And then Robert, he went to running with the bigger names and the bigger asphalt tracks. But he still had that 17 orange and white, but it was a different body style and all. He run some of the, you know, big name drivers. They would pay Robert, and he would, you know, he would run in some of them big races, different places. But Robert's a good friend of mine. Me and him, I really missed him. He had a stroke several years ago and died. But everybody liked Robert G.
Do you recall taking a very bad crash over the backstretch wall in Cherokee back in the day?
Yeah. Never will forget it. I was driving a white Zero for the Bradley boys from Greer. And we had a brand new car. I mean, that was the first, I believe that wreck happened in the heat race. But anyway, I was coming off of number 2, and the car clipped me from behind and turned me into the car in front of me, and I went over his hood and went down that big bank and landed upside down beside a big old tree and towed the car, and it was brand new. Everything on it was brand new. And it was terrible. I mean, it was tore all to pieces. And I had to cry. I couldn't get out the window because I was upside down next to a big tree. And I crawled out back over the roll bars out through the trunk because the hood was down in the hole. And I had to come back over the deck lid and come out through them roll bars up through there. And it was dark down in that hole. But that was a pretty bad wreck. All I could see was up in the air, cutting the flip, and see the top of them trees. And then I went down in the hole and landed right up beside the big old tree.
Would that be Jason Keller with the car that clipped you?
Yeah, he was just started. And he had a fast car, and he clipped me. He went up high, and I went under him and up practically upside the other car when he clipped me from the back. And it just turned me right straight into that other car, and I went over his hood and hit the little guardrail, and it was like a ramp. I run up it, and it got me airborne, and I think I was cutting a flip. I could see the top of them trees as I went over the fence and went down in that hole. But he was driving he was learning how to drive. He didn't, you know, he didn't mean to it. It was just a racing accident.
Do you have a most memorable win?
Well, a lot of was, I guess, that big 10 at Concord. The best in the country was there, and we led off the whole 100 laps from flag to flag. And that was the most money at the end. We got $11,000-something that night for qualifying. I believe we was on the pole. They had what they call a six lap dash, and I don't know where I won it, but I got over $11,000 and led and beat the best in the country, you know, Charlie Swartz and Freddie Smith and Donnie Moran. They was all there that night, all the big dogs, and we led every lap of it, and that was a big night. But I can tell you something that wasn't as exciting as that, but I won a 200-lap race at Cherokee in the 34 Fords, flatheads, got $200 for 200 laps at Gaffney one time. And we run 100 laps and stopped and worked on the cars and run another 100 laps, and that was big back in the, you know, the 34 Ford days with the flatheads. And you was lucky to get a car to run 200 laps without something tearing up on it.
I'd say you earned every bit of that $200.
Yeah, we.
Besides winning, what was your favorite part of racing?
Well, it was my, I guess, the car owner and my fans. Winning the race for them, the way, you know, it excites them. They really appreciate you and you know, them working on the car and all it. Winning the races for my crew and my fans. But now what I like best about racing was running the turns. You know, a lot of people in the first lap of the race, you know, a lot of people, I don't know, they get excited or mess up. But I enjoyed the first lap of the race and running the turns in the race. And that was my thrill, is going in that turn up under somebody and coming out and going down that back straightaway and passing cars. That was my thrill. I enjoyed that out of racing, just passing the cars and running the turns and that first lap deal. Of course, them last lap deals good, too, if you're out in front. But as far as enjoying it, I love to run the turns.
Billy, there's going to be a lot of people listening to this. Is there anything you want to say to the fans out there?
Well, I guess it's something about what we're talking about coming up through the race. And I did have a chance to go big time racing and could have. And I know I could have made it if I took that chance. But I enjoy the way I went, you know, short track, dirt tracks, and winning a lot of races and making a lot of good friends. And I enjoyed my whole racing career and probably would do it all over again the same way, but some things I would change. But I think that was, I enjoyed that, you know, the short track racing, because it was, that's where racing is really at to me. Even today, the cup cars, it's better racing on short tracks, and it is a big one, and I really enjoyed it. I won several hundred races and raced for 43 years. And like I say, I won races the last 2 years that I raced, and I really enjoyed everything I've done and all the friends I made in racing.
Billy, I want to thank you. I grew up watching you around the short tracks of the Carolinas, and always put on a great show, and you were a front runner even in the latter years of your career, and we really, really thank you for all the years you've put on a great show and raced your heart out each and every night. And I hope that you can make it up to Cherokee for the Stick Elliott Memorial coming up here next weekend.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna try to be there. If you're going to be there, I'll be there. Unless, we're supposed to go to the beach, but I might, I'm going to try to go to Stick Elliott race. But I really appreciate that. People like you and hundreds of others is the reason I kept racing as long as I did, because I enjoyed racing and I tried to be a gentleman about it. And in 1991, I asked the Lord to come into my life, and I drove a little bit different after 91, but not much, because I've always tried to be a gentleman. I wouldn't hit you unless you hit me. But I enjoyed the racing, the way I did, and I'm proud of the my life in racing, because I did try to do. I wasn't no redneck. I tried to do what was right every race that I went to.
Well, Billy, I appreciate it too. I'm up in Ohio, so I didn't get to see you a whole lot, but I've been around this sport my entire life, and I will not be satisfied until you and all the other legends, just like you, are in the National Dirt Late Model Hall of Fame.
Well, we've talked about it a lot, and people, we need one or two somewhere, the Dirt Track Hall of Fame, because they you got a lot of history on racing, and there's a whole lot of good people, good drivers that never did make it, especially up to the big times. But there's a lot of good people and a lot of good drivers throughout, all the states, that run. And we need something like that somewhere. And I was hoping they'd do that here in Spartanburg. And they still might do it, but they got the building about half ready, and something held up on the money. But we need one of them bad.
Well, we've got one up here in Florence, Kentucky, called the National Dirt Late Model Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And, they're just starting to get some of the names that I deem should be in there personally. I mean, they put a lot of the, not necessarily guys that didn't deserve it, but I think that guys like you and many others that were around this country deserve it before some of the newer drivers do. So
yeah.
We're working towards that. I think we're in our sixth year coming up. I do know that you are on the ballot. And I hope that in the future I get to meet you here at Florence, Kentucky as you get inducted.
Well, I'd sure appreciate it, because we need some. Cause if I don't get inducted, I still say we need them museums and the Hall of Fame, because, like I say, a lot of people deserve it, and people don't even know them, really.
They sure should, and that's I think that's one of our goals at DirtFans.com is we want none of you forgotten.
Yeah.
You're all important, and you're all the ones that made this a sport. And to be honest with you, it's all, guys like you and, of course, the fans through the years that supported you all. I mean, if it wasn't for the both of yous and the promoters out there and the car owners, the sport wouldn't be in the mess it's in today.
Yeah. Money takes over everything, don't it, just about?
Sure does.
It's took over the cup cars. Just like Darlington and Rockingham, they helped make racing. And Rockingham lost the dates, and Darlington had done lost one of them. On account of money, that's what it is money.
It's sad to see, and hopefully, in the future, people will recognize the true innovators of this sport and the true legends of this sport. And I definitely think you're one of them. We appreciate you coming on the show.
All right. Just talking about that, Richard Petty, he's always, and I've heard him say it many times, he always took up for the fans and the people that really supported racing. Richard Petty, he was one of the best that, made it big, but he never forgot where he come from. And I run with Richard down at Columbia every year. We'd have a Shrine race. And some of the big drivers would come down and run with us. And I've seen Richard down there. We'd be at the payoff window. And just about everybody would be done left the track, and Richard Petty would still be signing autographs and he didn't get paid for them back then. And you know, now they get, the boy told me, I was a Grand Marshal, you know, at Carolina Speedway the other week. And I was talking to that Wallace boy, Mike Wallace, he was there. And he told me that Tony Stewart turned down $50,000 for a two-hour autograph session. $50,000. And Dale, when I was close to Dale when he first made it, you know, he was getting $18,000 for 2 hours. But Tony turned down $50,000, didn't have time to go, or didn't need the money, one. I don't know which one it was, but that's what Mike Wallace said. He turned down $50,000 for 2 hours autographs. Ain't that something?
It's amazing.
Billy, it's been great having you. The stories have been wonderful, and we hope to have you again on soon.
Well, I certainly appreciate everything you're trying to do and everything you've done. I really appreciate it.
There you have it, Billy Scott. Hope you enjoyed that. We've got a lot of things coming up in the future. We've got a Larry Moore interview coming up real soon. You can actually ask Larry some questions if you visit our new forum. Thanks to the Drunken Race Fan, we have a new forum on dirtfans.com. Just visit www.dirtfans.com. Click on the forum button at the top. You'll have to register and start posting away. You can also leave us suggestions and feedback on that forum. And you can also contact us through the contacts page on dirtfans.com or on the Industry Outlaws. We have some contact information. So look forward to hearing any suggestions you might have. We also have an interview from Vern LeFevre coming up. It has been done, but we have to edit it. It takes a little bit of time. I want to thank everybody for their patience that are sending in pictures. It takes me a lot of time. I'm backed up. I've got about 500 pictures in line, so just be patient as you send them in, and we'll get to them. So I want to thank everybody for their contributions on Dirt Racing 101. And if you have any suggestions for names, just contact me, JT LeFevre at Zoomtown.com or JT LeFevre at DirtFans.com. So we appreciate it. Until next time.
Goodbye.
Hey, get my ass off. I play what the hell I want to play, when the hell I want to play it. You got that? Huh? I'm talking to you, biggin. You don't even want to stick your hand in this garbage can, kitty cat. No. You don't dare dream of what's inside, baby. Let me tell you that right now. Yeah. Brand new from the King. Mighty tasty.